Please turn the overhead off while I'm up here. Thank you. I want to take a couple of minutes to mention something to you. There are some that know that I've been looking for work, and it's been a while since I have been employed, and some have supported me during that time, just personally, and I know about those and can shake their hands and thank them. There are others that have put envelopes in the contribution, and you'll see it up on the board over here as another kind of contribution, and I get those checks from time to time. I appreciate those that have contributed to our upkeep during the time that I'm looking for work, and I just wanted to tell you that during that time. There you go. We're in Daniel chapter 3, verses 16 and 17. Daniel chapter 3, verses 16 and 17. This is during the time of captivity, during the first captivity, 606 B.C., we see the children of Israel being hauled off into Babylonian captivity with the officials of the government, and we see the princes of the nation being hauled off as well. And so the book of Daniel finds us with a part of the children of Israel, not all of it, but part of it, already in captivity. 2 Kings chapter 20, verses 16 through 18, Isaiah gives a prophecy to King Hezekiah. King Hezekiah has been foolish. He has recovered from his time of sickness, and he receives the Babylonian ambassadors and begins to show them around to all the glories of the kingdom, everything that is in the treasury, everything that is in the temple, all the treasures and riches of the land, he shows to them, and happily so. He wants others to be proud of what Israel has. But Isaiah comes and tells him, that's foolish. That's foolish because these people are going to come back. They're going to come and take all these things away, and even to the sons of the king. They're going to be taken away off into captivity, and they're going to be made eunuchs. You may want to note 2 Kings 20, verses 16 through 18, where these things are mentioned. This is what happens to these men of the captivity. Daniel chapter 3, verses 16 through 18, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. These young men had been taken captive, had been made eunuchs. I want you to think for about 5 seconds about what that means, and the kind of dispirited nature that it might cause to some people, because it's a horrible thing to happen, especially to a young man. They're made eunuchs, Daniel chapter 1 and verse 3. They're nearly destroyed, Daniel chapter 2, verse 13. Remember, the king wanted all the Chaldeans to remember both his dream and to give the interpretation. They couldn't do it. They were buying extra time. And until Daniel and his fellows learned about it, they gave the interpretation, at least Daniel did, and all the Chaldeans were saved. But they were about to die. And so you might think they might be a little bit dispirited about that. But then after that, they were promoted. Daniel chapter 2, verse 49. You'll see that Daniel himself was promoted high in the kingdom, but these three men were promoted high as well, just not to the length of Daniel. They made a choice. They were in a foreign land, at least 800 miles from what had been their home. They had been carried off into captivity and had been made eunuchs. You would think that they might say to God, you know, why should I follow you? Because of the things that had happened to them. They had a choice. They could have been bitter. Look what God has allowed to happen. A God that would allow that to happen to me is not going to receive my worship. But that's not what they did. They could have grown weak. Weak in faith. They could have been compromisers because of it. But they decided not to do any of those things. Didn't grow bitter. What did they do? They chose conviction. Now, let's get the scene in our minds. This is the biggest event that you can imagine in the world. In a few days, a few weeks, I don't remember when it is anymore, the Super Bowl is going to happen. And it is the biggest spectacle of the 21st century, by far. It's not only played out before 100,000 in a stadium, but it's also on television across the United States. And then, by satellite, to places throughout the world, there may be over 1 billion people watching. This was that kind of spectacle. There was a new statue going up, a statue made of gold that was thought up by the king himself. The king was going to be there. Everyone else was going to be there. They were all commanded, at least in the province of Babylon, to come and bow down when they hear the music. But three men, I don't know where Daniel is. The text simply doesn't tell us. May have been ill, may have been out of town. I don't know what it is, but these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they're there. And they decided, no, we're not going to bow down. Go back to the law of Moses, and they have good justification. Exodus chapter 20, verses 2 and following. They're not to bow down to any graven image. And so they don't. They chose conviction. They trusted. I'm sure many times you've heard people who of strong faith come across a great tribulation. And they have to put it in God's hands. They're going to obey God. And when you obey God, sometimes there are consequences. It may hurt your family. It may hurt your children. It may hurt your good name, among others, to bow down to God instead of to men. They trusted and placed the consequences in God's hands. They revealed what truly is character. What truly is integrity. That word integrity is very interesting. I'm sure that there are some Trekkies in this audience, and you can hear in your head the chief engineering say she's going to fly apart, that she's lost integrity. That is that idea of flying apart when the pressure is on. We often note that Abigail was a woman of integrity. There she was. There was an army that included David and his mighty men riding in on her home. And she goes out. Instead of going and hiding somewhere, she takes them food, just all she can pack up at the moment, and goes out and meets David. Her face is to the ground, and here are these horses and mighty men coming. They're not slowing down until they see her. And she speaks like a diplomat and wants to slow them down and remind David about the consequences of his actions. A woman of integrity. That's what these men are. They are men of integrity. When every bit of the society that they live in is bearing down upon them, when an angry king decides to heat up the furnace 7 times hotter than normal, they still say no. We're not going to bow down. There's some things that not in the text. There are some things that we know happen when you meet these kinds of challenges. There are people that whisper in your ear, you know, you can't do any good when you're dead. You know, sometimes you got to go along to get along. Maybe you can be more faithful later. But they said, no, we're not going to go along to get along. And if this causes every Jew in this empire to die, that's in God's hands. God has given commands, and we're going to obey those commands. They chose conviction. God preserved this story for a reason. Hopefully, all of you have a list of verses to memorize. And if you haven't, let's start with this one. Romans chapter 15 and verse 4. For whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the Scriptures might have hope. I don't know how many things were not preserved, how many faithful men of God didn't have their stories told in the end. I don't know. Maybe God put them all in, but the brevity of the Bible is such you only have what you need. And so there may have been many times when people stood up and said, no. But this one is preserved, and it's preserved for a reason. That you remember it when the forces of a nation, or the forces of a community, or the forces of your family, or just things in general, are pointed right at you and you have to make a decision. What are you going to do? These men said, no, we will not. It's an ancient message for you. It comes down through the years. And it calls upon you to act on these things. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's challenge. They were to stay faithful in an ungodly world. And it was ungodly. It was an ungodly king. There were jealous ministers that were trying to get these men removed. They had pleased the king at one point, but there was a law now, and this law was against them. That's the problem with the laws of men. They're not always thought out to the nth degree. The entire weight of authority and society are coming to bear on these three men. All eyes are on them. Once it's pointed out, you know, king, you made a law, and these three men are not bowing down. What? They're not bowing down? Let's see about that. The king speaks softly to them at first. Why are you not bowing down? Do you think that your God is going to save you from me? And then he gets angry at these men. I'm not only going to put them in the furnace, I'm going to put them in a fiery furnace. Not only in a fiery furnace, but a burning fiery furnace. Now you remember this fact about the Bible. When it talks about things in multiples, you can be sure that this was a hot furnace. Hotter than anything else you can imagine. The only thing that I can liken it to, one day back in 1984 or so, my family was out in West Texas on a vacation. We went across from El Paso into Juarez. In Juarez, there was a glass factory. And there were men in there all day long blowing glass to order. And so you could go in there and you could feel the heat. It must have been 130 degrees at least. I was sweating the moment I went in there. And that touches nothing of what we're talking about in this story. Heat. Can you imagine going up to an open volcano and feeling the heat there? Can you imagine going up to the Old Faithful in the National Park and feeling the heat? If you were to go into that water, it would cook your skin off. These are the types of things we think about. I remember it was one of those rare times in Texas where you have a fireplace. Meemaw and Papaw had a fireplace there in the city of Austin. And the kids, of course, we're kids. We want a fire. But it wasn't wise to have a fire. It really wasn't hot enough. It was just cool. And we didn't know about the nest of squirrels that were in the chimney. So he started a fire, and something started coming down the chimney. Why it came down the chimney, I don't know, but there were squirrels on fire going through the living room. We finally got them outside, but quite an exciting time. On fire! They finally stopped moving, but it was a scary time. If you've ever been burned real good, you know something of the fear that could come upon these three men. The fear that was inherent in being threatened with the burning fiery furnace. They were jealous Chaldeans. They were made heads of the province of Babylon, and others wanted their jobs. There was a law without exemptions. Everyone had to bow down. There was a horrendous penalty. And then there was a spotlight. All eyes are on them. What are you going to do? Can you maintain your integrity before the king of the known world? Can you do it? And then there's that advice that I talked about earlier. You're no good dead. I can just imagine it, can't you? Somebody, well, have you thought about us? What we're going to do once you're gone? I'm sure the Jews were thinking and telling them those things. They even frame it in terms of arrogance. You're so arrogant that you think you know more than the king and his ministers. Why don't you just do what you're told? Why don't you just go along to get along? I am quite sure, because we know men and this is what men do. I'm quite sure that they heard all these things. And still, they maintained their integrity, though they were threatened in this way. Acts chapter 5, verse 39 must be spoken of. The apostles of Jesus Christ had been brought before the Sanhedrin. You may not remember the name Sanhedrin, but this is the same group of people that shouted, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" They were going to do something about these apostles if they didn't quit preaching Jesus. But what did these apostles say? What did Peter say? "We ought to obey God rather than men." It's an interesting word. We don't always think about that word "ought." That means that there's a moral point to it. That it's morally right to obey God rather than men. And since it's morally right, you have the obligation. We ought to obey God rather than men. I know we sometimes loosen up the meaning of it, but that word does give you an obligation. So the challenge is clear. They have to withstand and maintain their integrity before this new religion. What about their courage? The courage of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They didn't challenge the king, but they refused to worship false gods. They were not being radicals. They were not throwing fire bombs. They were not acting out in any way. They just said, "No, we're not going to do it. And we'll offer up our bodies to believe that, to act in that way." Exodus 20, verses 2 through 7. Where did they come up with the idea that they could withstand this great king and the wisdom of all the Chaldeans? Exodus 20, verses 2 through 7. Get the scene here. On the desert floor rises before them this mountain. This mountain is on fire. This mountain quaked. This mountain caused the ground to rumble beneath their feet. And they were intensely afraid, the children of Israel. They looked up at this mountain and started to hear words. These were the words of Almighty God. Notice it with me, if you will. Verse 1, "And God spake all these words." God, Jehovah, the one who brought them out of the land of Egypt. He is the one that spoke the words. He says, "I am the Lord thy God, which have brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them. For I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children, unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments. I can imagine that these three men were thinking of these particular scriptures, these particular verses. They didn't challenge the king, but they knew what was right. They didn't take it lightly. Notice chapter 3, verse 16 in the last part of that verse. That they told the king, we have not decided this lightly. It's not something that we haven't thought about. It's something that we have searched our souls about and have come up with this conclusion. That we ought not bow down to the king, to the king's new God. So they didn't. They realized that God had not promised them protection from the king. Their courage understood that particular fact. Excuse me, back to Daniel chapter 3. And if you haven't, like I haven't, then you ought to put your marker there, because we're going to be referring back to it from time to time. There we go. He says in verse 17, if it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. Notice he said, our God is able, but he might decide not to. He says, but if not, verse 18. And so they were, God hadn't told them, if you stand up, that I'm going to save you. No. They are left to make the conclusion based upon what the Lord has told them before. They did what few do. They acted on their convictions and not on convenience. Conviction, convenience, sounds similar, but there's a wide gap between the two. Conviction over convenience. Oftentimes, convenience is what we want, but conviction is often rare. We remember Moses, Hebrews 11, verses 24 through 26. We remember that he left his position in Egypt. He left the glories of the throne. He left these things and took on the task that God gave him. We remember Joshua. There in the end of Joshua chapter 24 and verse 15. As for me and my house, we will obey the Lord. Others were being told that they had a choice, but they needed to choose life and choose rightly. You remember a man by the name of Micaiah? He was a prophet of God, but the northern king, Ahab, he said, there is a prophet of Jehovah here. The prophets of Baal already said, go up and you'll be victorious. The southern king asked, well, isn't there a prophet of God, of Jehovah? Well, there is, but I hate him. I hate him because he always says the wrong thing about me. He prophesies things that are against me. Well, bring him out. So they brought him out. And he was given some good advice. Good, quote unquote, by the man sent to bring him out. If you're wise, you'll speak like the other prophets of Baal. The prophets of Baal have said that the king is going to be victorious. And he said this, as the Lord liveth, what the Lord saith unto me, that will I speak. What the Lord saith unto me, that will I speak. You know, in the ancient Near East, if you were before a king and he didn't like you, didn't like the looks of you, didn't like something about you, your death was imminent. But that man, Micaiah, he was of the opinion that God was first. and he was simply an afterthought. And he was going to obey God because God was the show. God was the thing. God was what was important. Matthew chapter 14 and verse 4. John the Baptist. Matthew chapter 14 and verse 4. I'm going to tell you something about this particular passage that you may not have ever heard. But you need to jot it down. It's about the Greek of the matter. You know, I don't speak about the Greek often because I would reveal my ignorance way too fast. But in Matthew chapter 14 and verse 4, for John said unto him, it is not lawful for thee to have her. See, in the Greek, there are clues as to something more that can be said about this passage. But this is in the imperfect tense. And it denotes continuous action in past time. And this word said is in the imperfect tense. Continuous action in the past time. So what does it mean? It means that John said, and he said, and he said, and when he got up after his meal, he said again, got up the next day, and he said, and he said, and he said, what did he say? It is not lawful for thee to have her. He didn't say it just one time in some faraway place out in the wilderness. No, he kept on saying, he kept on pointing out, because he wanted the children of Israel to denounce that way of life. And so he said, and he said, and he said, and he said, continuous action in past time. Such was the conviction of John the Baptist. And once again, ancient Near East kings, if they didn't like you, you could be not long for this world. In fact, many people, and including John, I believe, didn't believe that he was long for this world, that his head was going to be removed. And finally, it was. The Apostle Paul, the courage and conviction of this man is unrivaled. 2 Corinthians 11, verses 23 through 28. Are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool. I am more. In labors more abundant, in stripes above measure, in prisons more frequent, in deaths oft. Of the Jews, 5 times received I 40 stripes, save one. I want you to think about that statement. One stripe. For most of us today, we'd be calling 911. Really. That's the nature of the weapon that was being used. The flagellum, they had things on the end that would rip skin off quite often. And if they didn't have that, they had pieces of metal or lead or stone to cause you to break ribs in your back. And if not that, they could pound your kidneys into oblivion. These things are what Paul had to deal with. And we think about one stripe. Somebody hit me with that, and I'll take them to and have them put in prison. 40 stripes, save one, 5 times. Didn't stop him. He continued preaching. He kept on going because he looked to Jesus. Thrice was I beaten with rods. Once was I stoned. Thrice I suffered shipwreck. A night and a day I have been in the deep. Let's stop and think about the stoned once again. The people of the ancient Near East knew how to kill people with rocks. We often think that it's picking up a rock. And just when I was a kid, my grandpa had a farm, and the road to the house had crushed limestone. And so there was all kinds of rocks that you could pick up and throw. Sometimes we'd throw them at the snakes that we saw crossing the road. And sometimes my brother would miss and hit me with one of those rocks. But this is not what that was. oftentimes the coup de grace was picking up a rock that big and bashing someone's head in or crushing their chest. Sometimes they thrust someone off the cliff and they dropped rocks on them, rocks big enough to kill. How many times was he stoned? Now, I don't have a Polaroid or a movie of what happened to Paul. I can't verify everything I've said, but this is what happened. But I can surmise that the people that wanted to kill Paul were just as proficient at it as everyone else. Paul, after having survived these punishments, how do he survive? I don't know. Maybe it was miraculous. But he went on. He went on to preach at the next town because that's what he's commanded to do. I suffered shipwreck. A night and a day I have been in the deep, in journeyings often, in perils of waters and perils of robbers and perils by mine own countrymen and perils by the heathen and perils in the city and perils in the wilderness and perils in the sea and perils among false brethren. And weariness and painfulness and watchings often, in hunger and thirst and fastings often, in cold and nakedness. Beside these things, those things that are without, that which cometh upon me daily, the care of all the churches. Those of you who are active in the oversight of a congregation, think about having to deal with all the churches. Just say all the churches in Missouri. And think about the weight of that responsibility. This is what our apostle went through. Our beloved apostle Paul. All these painful things. All these near-death experiences. And yet he trudged forward. He went forward preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. Because he had courage. Because he had conviction. Let's talk about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's conviction. First, they believe that God is able. That God is able to save them if He wants. That He could defeat this false God and its purposes. God is able, but Nebuchadnezzar didn't think so. Look in verse 15 at the end there. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hand? Nebuchadnezzar believed that the God of Israel wasn't up to the task. They didn't contradict the king. God is not bound. That's another thing that they believe. One of their convictions. That we're going to take the brunt even if God doesn't save us. That we'll face the fiery furnace, the burning fiery furnace. We'll face it because we have the conviction that we have the consequences. Whether or not the Lord saves, the right thing was to refuse. Even though the consequences were so great. They believed that the consequences were in God's hands. We often say, if I don't do this or that, some people may steal because the consequences are their children will go hungry. And so they steal. And sometimes a husband or a father will decide to cheat on the job, cheat on their taxes or something like that. Because if they don't, that there will be consequences. They won't be able to pay a bill or won't be able to rise in the company or something of that nature. And so they go along to get along. They do those things they know not to be right. But when we stand, we leave the consequences to God, even if it's our children that may be hurt. We look forward in time and we can't see where God comes in, and so we fret about it and we end up doing the wrong thing. We're just not strong. We don't have the courage of our convictions. But Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego, they did. What was their will? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's will. Their conviction was such that in the face of certain death, and possibly the death of all the Jews. Can you imagine this king being angry enough to, if Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are going to be a problem, then I'll just get rid of all the Jews. He could have done that. He could have said that. He could have thought that. I can see that very easily. Kings in the future would have to deal with that kind of thing. These men said, in face of all this, we will not. Notice it, verse 18. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. We're just not going to do it. Well, the king says, if you don't, you're going to die, and die horribly. And they said, basically, bring it on, because we're not going to bow down. There are parents who won't say no to their teens when they act badly. I know it's not a popular thing to bring up, but there's a time when your son or your daughter want to go along with their peers, and you have the responsibility to say no. And you look ahead and you see that there's going to be ice cubes in the house or icicles. It's going to become a refrigerator, and you don't want that. And so you, all right, I know it's wrong, but what's it going to hurt? You know it's something wrong. You have the responsibility to say no. That's hardly the same as what they went through in Daniel 3. But that's the kind of thing that we go through. Somebody close to you wants to do something wrong, and you can either go along to get along, or you can say, I'm not having anything to do with that. And you're not using my money to do that. And I'm not making a way for you to do that. I'm not participating, nor am I making it possible. You're on your own if you want to do that. We all have the ideas in our heads about what those things are. We have to say no. All of you have seen it in the grocery store. Some child is screaming because somebody won't give them something fast enough. And so the child keeps on screaming because they've done this before. And they know if they scream long enough that they will get what they want. Well, a parent has to make a decision. That decision may be what causes them to be thrown in jail for a while for abuse. You can choose to pick up a child and tell that child, you know, you'll be very much happier if you quit crying. And so I'm going to give you something to remind you not to do this anymore. And you give them three pops on the behind and say, that's enough. But people won't do that. Why? It's the right thing. We know it's the right thing, but we don't want anybody to see us do it. And so we put it off until either we're home or we're in the car. But the right thing is to take care of it right then and there. Yes, I know somebody's going to look over, you abuser. Somebody's going to look over and say, how could you? Somebody's going to look at you and perhaps pick up their smartphone and start dialing. I'm going to tell on you. But sometimes you just got to do what's right. The will of these three men were such that I'm just not going to do that which is wrong. You couldn't entice them with money. You couldn't entice them with popularity. You couldn't entice them with comfort. They simply would not. In the church where I have tried out recently, there were some that decided not to attend anymore because they were disappointed with the former preacher, disappointed with how he lived his life. And so they were going to stay home. I can't come to worship, they say, because I'm just too angry. So because someone else had sinned, they had decided that they were going to sin too. I'm sure they didn't look at it that way, but they need to see that their conviction is not what these men's were. that I'm going to do what the Lord said no matter what somebody else does, even if they're a preacher or an elder or a deacon or someone who is famous in the brotherhood, that I'm going to do the right thing. If I'm the last one, I will be where I'm supposed to be. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are shining examples of what we need to be. We may never face an angry Nebuchadnezzar. We may never face the punishment, but we might. We may never, but it ought to be that much easier for us to have convictions and to live by those convictions. Here are some things you need to have convictions about. Hebrews 11, verse 6. That God is and that He is a rewarder of them that diligently seek Him. Matthew chapter 28, verse 18. All power is given unto me in heaven and in earth. Jesus says He is the Messiah, and we are bound to believe that. That we ought to obey God. We've already noticed Acts chapter 5, verse 39. We ought to obey God rather than men. We need to have the courage of our convictions to note that sin separates us from God. Isaiah 59, verse 2. Behold, the Lord's hand is not shortened that it cannot save, neither His ear heavy that it cannot hear. But your sins have separated between you and your God, and your iniquities have hid His face from you, that He will not hear. It's not God's fault, that it's yours. And that it is a problem. Romans 3, verse 23 tells us that the problem is universal. For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. And that it causes death. Romans 6, verse 23. For the wages of sin is death. That we need to have the courage of our convictions that it is a problem. Once you figure out it is a problem, that if you go to your Maker in those sins, that it's not going to be a pleasant experience for you, you'll get up and do something about it. Courage of your convictions. Do you believe these things? You also need to understand and have a conviction that Jesus and Jesus only has a plan. For there is no other name given among men whereby we must be saved. Acts chapter 4, verse 12. That He's it. That's it. If you don't respond to Him, where are you going to go? You going to go to self-help books? You going to go to the advice of your family? When it comes to sin, there is only one authority. How to get out of sin? It's the blood of Christ applied to you. Peter knew that. Day of Pentecost, he assured people that they were guilty of the sin of murdering the Son of God. And they said, men and brethren, what must we do? Acts 2, verse 37. The very next verse, the gracious words of Peter. Then Peter said unto them, repent and be baptized, every one of you in the name of Jesus Christ, for the remission of sins. And ye shall receive the gift of the Holy Ghost. Happy day when people have decided that that's what they're going to do. The angels in heaven rejoice. And they're in fellowship with the God, the Creator of the universe. It's worth everything that you have. It's worth everything that you own. Have a conviction. If it's the fact that you've made this conviction and yet you've not done anything about it until this moment, let this moment be the one. If we can assist you in your obedience, won't you come and sit on one of these front pews as we stand and as we sing.